The following program is paid for and presented by John DeMasi. The opinions expressed are not those of Town Square Media or station advertisers.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5 presents Talk with a Purpose. Join the conversation by calling 407-1450. Now, the host of Talk with a Purpose, John DeMasi.
Good morning. Hour number three, Talk with a Purpose, every Saturday, 9 till noon, right here. WPG Talk Radio 95.5 FM. Don't forget, you can also hear us on 1450 AM and online at WPGTalkRadio.com. We are pleased to have with us once again. She's been on our show before, and she's part of, actually, she's the CEO of the Lighthouse at Mays Landing, part of the RCA network, Recovery Centers of America. She is Dawn Belamarich. Dawn, welcome back. Last time, I think you were interim. Now you're the officially the CEO. Is that correct?
That's right. Nice to talk to you. I was in our executive director role previously, and then the last 7 months I've taken over as our CEO.
Well, that's good. Congratulations. New year, same old. I mean, we deal with the pandemic, and, you know, I know you guys do this for a living. You deal with the drugs and alcohol and that kind of thing. We're hearing that there's a light at the end of the tunnel for the pandemic. Let's talk about drugs and alcohol. Are you seeing any kind of light as far as addictions are concerned? Are you seeing any decrease in cases or thing? That's kind of what my question is. Are you seeing any light at the end of the tunnel with regards to addiction, whether it's drugs or alcohol?
Well, I think, you know, we certainly haven't seen a decrease in the amount of individuals needing treatment, you know, or certainly individuals that are struggling. I think the light at the end of the tunnel really surrounds the, you know, openness and willingness of people to come forward and admit that they're struggling and get help. I always try to find the positive in that. I think we're truly creating like a recovery community where people feel invested in coming forward and safe. But, you know, the number of people needing help is certainly not slowing down.
Is that attributed, do you think, did the pandemic make addiction worse because people couldn't go anywhere or couldn't go to work or just were home more? Did it make it worse?
I definitely think so. I think we're seeing it more than maybe we were even in 2020. You know, the disease of addiction is really, a lot of it is isolation, right? And, you know, lack of networking and lack of structure. And unfortunately, COVID really forced people to go into those silos without many opportunities for much else. So right now we are certainly seeing people, you know, struggle that are used to going to face-to-face meetings and maybe had some virtual options or had a structured work day, and that's been removed. I've seen a lot of people, unfortunately, John, during this pandemic that have had significant, you know, periods of sobriety that have fallen off, you know, and relapsed. So, yeah, it is a shame. And I think, you know, a lot of the key components of recovery and working a program were removed during the pandemic. So trying to find new systems and new support so that we can get them back on their way.
I've always asked you, and I've asked everybody when they come on, about what's new at RCA. And you and I had a brief conversation this week, and you were telling me about something new called WorkFlex. And that sounds pretty interesting. Can you explain what that is?
Sure. So, you know, in really seeing how the pandemic was unfolding and some of the changes with COVID, most things went virtual. And for a lot of individuals coming into treatment, this included work. So in order to really adapt and be able to provide the best options and innovative services for patients coming in, we created a program called WorkFlex that really helps individuals be able to balance work and school off, you know, opportunities while still getting substance use treatment. So it's certainly not for everyone that's working virtually or everyone that's employed or going to school, but really WorkFlex allows these 3-hour slots during the course of a treatment day where individuals can complete the work or school assignments. They can, you know, add additional treatment groups to their day so that we're not compromising the integrity of their treatment program and stay in touch. You know, not have to use work or school as a barrier for coming into the treatment center. And We launched it at the end, I think December 22nd is when we went live, and it has been phenomenal so far. The amount of people coming in is, it's really been incredible. Yeah, to see that that not be a barrier for them to get help.
Well, I think we've talked about this when you've been on and when others have been on, excuse me, is that, you know, you're removing barriers one by one, and here's another one. So that, so that they don't have excuses. Well, you know, I got work, I got this, I got that, you know, so that's a good thing. I want to get back to WorkFlex in a moment, but you said something there about virtual, and I've always been curious about the whole virtual world since everybody is so concerned about COVID. Have you seen the switch to virtual meetings and all of that? Have you seen that be effective with regards to addiction treatment?
I think there was a little bit of an adapt period, I call it. I think in March, April of last year, when everything first went live, everyone was trying to figure it out. You know, we were very used to face-to-face, more relational approach. I would say it took a couple months. And then I think the virtual meetings caught on. You know, I know that there's people that are really benefiting now. We're able to do virtual options from any location as compared to having to drop things and, you know, get to a meeting, right? So there's a lot of value add for that. I think virtual has also helped, you know, with at RCA, our outpatient programs, right? We're meeting the needs of a larger group of people than we might have been able to prior. So I feel it's almost normalized at this point. You know, it's probably going to be more of an adapt to go back to the face-to-face model. So beginning struggles, and now a little bit more normalized probably for our patient population.
Are you going to go back to, because we see that there's some schools are going back to, you know, in-person learning. Are you going to go back to maybe like a hybrid, some in-person, some virtual? How's that going to work?
Yeah, and I think we are right now. So we, you know, obviously on our inpatient side, we've been seeing patients coming through the facility since March. We haven't ceased operations of services whatsoever. But on our outpatient side, we're doing some level of hybrid in all of our levels of care. I have to assume that this has opened, you know, some opportunities to treat more patients virtual. So we'll more than likely maintain that hybrid model. And then, you know, virtual works for some patients, which is great, and it doesn't work for others, right? So they would benefit from that face-to-face approach.
If you've just tuned in, Dawn Belamarich is our guest. She is the CEO of the Lighthouse at Mays Landing, part of Recovery Centers of America. And if you have a question for Dawn, if you have someone who you know who is maybe you think they're addicted or they have a problem, now's a good time to call 609-407-1450. That's our number here in the studio, 609-407-1450. Feel free to call in and ask Dawn a question. 609-407-1450. We're talking about WorkFlex, which kind of allows patients to go to work for a couple of hours and then, of course, get treatment. I'm curious, Dawn, I was thinking about this when you and I were talking about it. And I was thinking, well, how do employers feel about having someone who's in treatment going back into the workforce? Are they on board with this? Have you had a problem with getting them on board? Are they reluctant? Talk about that.
So I think one of the great things about WorkFlex is it's part of the, you know, part of the plan for them coming in is to provide the consent for the employer, but it's not necessarily a requirement that we communicate with them. We're seeing WorkFlex be really, really helpful for our self-employed population, you know, students. We do get consents for employers, but it doesn't necessarily mean we have to contact them, John. It's really our means of saying we want to be able to loop everyone in to support you, you know, if this becomes a problem or a barrier. But for the most part, employers have been supportive. I think, you know, again, another misconception I think that individuals have in coming into treatment is that they have to continue to live in silence and hide that, right? And what we're trying to get to the point of is to make getting help common, you know, common practice. And I've seen significant improvement in the way employers and others are feeling about receiving treatment. And I think COVID has probably played a part in that, right? More of an understanding that people need help and you know, we have a responsibility to help them get well.
You know, you were talking earlier and you said so far, I think you launched WorkFlex right around the holidays. And you were saying that it's worked out well. I mean, have you felt that it's helped to encourage people to get treatment, to get help, because they don't have to completely give up work?
I do. And I think that was the idea, right? We knew in launching a program, our first goal when someone comes into the facility is substance use treatment, you know, and recovery. So we didn't want to launch something that was going to take away from that, because, you know, we have a brief period of time to help people set the foundation, you know, for the remainder of their recovery journey. But I do think for those who it is applicable for, it really reduced the barriers that we hear of. You know, we get a lot of calls on the front end about, I can't stop working, I own my business, you know, I have school deadlines. And all that really does is delay the process, you know.
Yeah.
And I think WorkFlex has really, really, really helped for those individuals who are appropriate for the program to reduce that barrier from admission.
Yeah, you know, you were talking about that. I mean, I'm self-employed. I don't have a whole lot of backup. In fact, I don't have any backup.
Right.
I'm the backup. Right. Okay. So I was thinking about that, and I said, well, that really answers a lot of questions, or it serves to answer a lot of objections people would have, that they're saying, hey, listen, at least I can go to work. What is it? 3 hours a day? Is that what you allow for the WorkFlex?
Yeah, it's 3 hour spots. We have a morning one and an afternoon one. And you know what I also noticed, Sean, which I think was great? The barriers that we set in the, you know, before we come in for treatment or before we access the help. We've had a lot of individuals who, you know, wanted WorkFlex and really called in for that, and then get to the facility and, you know, realize they have FMLA or disability or are able to get unemployment. It's almost as if having the opportunity to do it reduces the barrier that when they get in, they're comfortable with exploring other options. And
that's been one of the big wins. Yeah, that's good. I really, when you started telling me about it, I thought, boy, this is a, you know, it would figure RCA would come up with a way to really eliminate as many objections as they can, because the biggest objection is, as you know, we've talked about it, is people don't want to enter treatment because, well, you know, I have so many things and I can't really take the time to do that. But you've answered the question really with that.
100%. And I think that was our goal when we saw what the pandemic was doing, you know, for virtual work and school and things of that nature, is how can we continue to reduce the barriers so that this isn't just another thing to add to the list as to why, you know, people are delaying getting help.
Dawn, we have someone who wants to talk to you. We're going to go to the phones. Tom is in Little Egg Harbor. Tom, good morning. You're on with Dawn Bellamarich here on Talk with a Purpose.
Hi, Dawn. How you doing? Listen, I never had a problem. Before I had a problem, I dealt with myself. But I noticed with these addicts, they slip more than they actually stick with the program. And then what it does at my workplace, it affects my work schedule. When we try to help them, and then they go from one extreme, they go into a gambling problem from a drug problem. It just doesn't end, and then I end up suffering because of it. Because the way my seniority is, it, you know, to me it's not fair, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I agree with what you're saying, Tom, and obviously not the first time we've heard employers have those concerns. And I think that that's why it's even more important that, you know, someone comes to a place like RCA where we're providing, you know, a lot of structure and really exceptional treatment, because our goal isn't to have people, you know, that struggle on and off, right? Because it affects everyone.
Yeah. And are you still there?
Yeah. Go ahead, Tom. Go ahead.
And what it does is affect my work. I got to go home. I got to deal with it. And I'm like, well, my wife goes, well, why are you so? Well, because my seniority is, they fall under me. So if they're gone, and then I got to fill their shift. And it's a vicious. But some people are really strong-minded, really, really want to help, can do it. But when you got someone, well, I did the 3 weeks, I did the 4 weeks, but I have another problem. I mean, yeah, it gets old. I get tired of hearing it. And I know you're out there to help them. But don't the person himself really, really, really got to get help for themselves? And I try to help people. They don't even want the damn help. I just need money for my habit. Well, your habit's going to kill you.
Yeah.
And I'm not contributing to your habit. It's so sad. You can help, I say, out of 10 people, you maybe only held up maybe 3, but the other strong wills don't have it in them. No matter how many organizations, but if you want to go to a program, but some of us don't have these multi-million dollar money to go to get real help. So actually, it's a revolving door anymore. I see it happening. That's why we have a lot of homeless in our cities.
Tom, thank you. Thanks for the call. Dawn, that brings up a point, and I wanted to address this because Tom brought it up. In terms of the work flex, and we're talking about not someone who's self-employed, because obviously if you're self-employed, as we said, there, you don't have a lot of backup. But if you're working for someone, are you, as RCA, part of this, are you monitoring their progress and are you helping them kind of stay on track? And are you working with the employers to make sure they stay on track? Talk about that situation that Tom kind of brought up.
Yeah, so I think, you know, Tom's point is one we hear often, right, which is the accountability behind, you know, ensuring that there's, this is not a cycle. And, you know, there's so many different situations based on labor laws in the state. Obviously, our first hope is that an individual can, you know, go out on a leave or, you know, a known kind of plan with their employer so that they can engage in treatment fully. But, you know, we do. Of course, an individual has a right to consent, you know, who we speak to in their treatment process. So it's not always perfect. But, you know, Tom's point really is just reminiscent of the importance of quality treatment and a team like ours, for instance, who's setting up solid aftercare and making sure that they have a sponsor before they leave and, you know, things like that. Because, you know, relapse is a part of a recovery for a lot of our patients. And, you know, it's sad to hear stories like that where it impacts so many employees and higher levels of hierarchy in a business because, you know, this is the nature of the disease we're fighting.
Dawn Belamarich is our guest. She is the CEO of the Lighthouse at Mays Landing, part of Recovery Centers of America. And of course, it's our continuing series here on the show, Fighting the Opioid Addiction. And if you have a question for Dawn, this is a good time for you to jump in at 609-407-1450. 609-407-1450. Again, Dawn Belamarich, CEO of the Lighthouse at Mays Landing. And I'm your host, John DeMasi. We return more of today's Talk with a Purpose and Fighting the Opioid Addiction. We'll do that after these words. Back here on Talk with a Purpose, our guest, Dawn Belamarich, CEO of the Lighthouse at Mays Landing. If you have a problem or you know someone who has a problem, and I'm going to talk about this with Dawn in a few minutes, I get calls all the time. People say, yeah, you know, that place you have on your show, I right away, I know, Recovery Centers of America. Yeah. What's the number? 1-800-RECOVERY, 1-800-RECOVERY. That did happen this week, by the way, Dawn. Yeah. What's that number again?
News.
Yeah. I have it memorized, you know, 1-800-RECOVERY. And I would not hesitate if I were you. If you know someone or if you are the person, don't hesitate to call because they can help you. And they act real quick. Let me tell you, they're quick as a cat. You know, it's, imagine that. 1-800-RECOVERY is the number. 1-800-RECOVERY for Recovery Centers of America. And you can talk to Dawn Belamarich right now here on our show, 609-407-1450. If you have a question regarding addiction or addiction treatment. Dawn, you know, I just want to go back for a moment. Not that we want to go back to 2020, but we all know it was a challenging year. Let's talk about the steps that RCA took in 2020 to combat addiction with regards to the pandemic. And furthering that in this year, are you furthering those steps? Adjustments are being made. Talk about what you're looking at in terms of 2021.
Sure. So I think one of the really great things we did was we were really proactive in handling, you know, both the opioid epidemic, addiction epidemic with the pandemic. So, you know, by the first week of April last year, we rolled out an extended evaluation unit at all of our sites, which was essentially an area where new patients coming in received a COVID test, you know, a PCR COVID test, and were on a unit, you know, in single rooms until they received the results of those tests. after that time, I mean, they were able to go to the general population and engage in treatment, but that safety protocol really helps mitigate, you know, a lot of risk for our patients and team. You know, not shortly after that, we started weekly testing for our staff as well, which, you know, really helped keep the patient safe and fellow team members. And I think that that was really important. And, you know, finally, full mask and PPE compliance. We're still doing that today. And, you know, we've changed some of our testing protocols as far as what we're using, but the mask compliance is, you know, expected for everyone, patients and staff in the building. And I think, you know, it's like we talked about with the virtual options. It was challenging in the beginning because it was brand new for everyone, but we've really gotten to the point, patients and staff, where it's become normalized. You know, this is a protective thing we put in place to ensure we're staying safe and keeping one another safe. We recently rolled out, you know, the PCR test had about a 36-hour turnaround time, more of a, you know, more rapid antigen testing, right? So we're able to test our patients on a biweekly cadence now. Our staff are getting tested twice a week, just really increasing the safety protocols and making sure we're keeping everyone safe. And I think the patients and the team has responded to it very well, and we've been able to mitigate a lot of risk and continue to provide treatment.
Dawn, was it more of a challenge last year, and do you see that continuing to help people get better with all the virtual stuff and all that? Do you feel that there was success last year at RCA?
Absolutely. I think when you're in it, you might not realize it as much, right? But I think the pandemic has opened up treatment modalities that we may not have explored prior. You know, it's really opened up some virtual platforms, 12-step meetings, you know, levels of care and outpatient. I'm able to utilize resources. You know, we had a yoga instructor do virtual meditation a week ago. Just things that we did not think about previously because we were very, you know, set on our face-to-face model we had used historically really opened up during the pandemic. And I think now that we're, you know, moving through it, right, and able to look back, we can see some true successes with those things occurring.
You have said, and just about everybody who has said, who has come here on the show, and do you believe we're going into our sixth year of doing this show? You believe that?
It's so crazy to me. I was saying it the other day when I was going on, because Lighthouse is coming up on their 5-year anniversary in March.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah,
well, I knew it was a while, but someone told me 6 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but you've said it, and Dr. Denny Carice has said it, but I wanted to say it again so that people understand this, that RCA's treatment protocols are evidence-based. But, you know, when you say that, you know, the skeptic's going to say, all right, tell me what the evidence is. Can you share a couple things with us on that?
Sure. So, you know, obviously Dr. Denny is very research driven and follows a lot of that. I think, you know, our approaches are really based on what research indicates works, which is small group sizes for our patients, you know, a personal touch with their counselors. We use motivational interviewing and cognitive behavioral approaches. And again, listeners may not know these things, but there are therapeutic approaches that research indicates work well to treat the disease of addiction. You know, we have definitely treated the disease as a whole person model instead of just focusing on a substance when they come in. And, you know, as you know, RCA boasts, you know, fitness, Reiki, yoga, you know, mental health treatment, right? Family work, a whole person approach to the treatment. And that is based on evidence. You know, that's based on research that, you know, when Tom and other people are asking about relapse and things of that nature that help reduce the rates of those. So, you know, we're constantly looking at the research, constantly bringing in more evidence-based items, but our goal is to have the most innovative and current trends so that we can stay current with our treatment modalities and give people the best chance of recovery the first time around.
And, you know, you forgot one thing. You forgot spirituality.
I did. And yeah, that is one of the greatest programs we have at Lighthouse.
Yeah. See, aren't you glad that I've been doing this a long time?
I am so glad, John. You always tell me what I forget, because I'm like, what else am I talking about? And then I completely forgot our Christian program.
Yeah. But it's all part of that, right? I mean, you put it all together, sort of like a puzzle, right? You put all the pieces together and you get a complete puzzle. And then hopefully the person is well again after the treatment. That's kind of the
right.
The big picture, correct?
Yes. And I think we, you know, there's a lot of preconceived notions about addiction and, you know, what it means and how we treat it. But as human beings, we're diverse, we're unique. You know, there's a lot of factors that make up who we are. And whether you struggle with the disease of addiction or not, a lot of things that impact, you know, how you develop and who you become. And it's vital for us to be able to loop all those factors in and treat every aspect of, you know, our patients, because that gives them the best chance for success in the future.
Okay. I want to go back to my story that just about every month, RCA is usually on the first Saturday of the month here on my show. And usually between the time you're on and the next time you're on, I'll get one or two calls from friends to say, you know, what's the name of that? You have those people on the show. And I know right away where this is going. I said, Recovery Centers of America. Yeah. Well, my son, this is a good friend of mine. My son, and he goes on and on. I said, look, you're in Florida. He's here in New Jersey. I will make some calls, and then I'll go there when they meet him. And this goes to the point of the young man doesn't want to go, but is in a situation where, as my friend described, it's desperately needed, but he's resisting right. And he doesn't want to go. And I said, well, look, I'll make some phone calls. I mean, whatever. But I want you to talk about how you get to the point of someone who, you know, or a family member knows they desperately need treatment, but the person doesn't know, and the person has what they call massive resistance to treatment. Can you touch on that and how you can help people get a person to the point where they would at least listen and perhaps go into treatment?
Sure. I mean, I would say addiction or not, right? Most of us are pretty set in our ways when it comes to certain things. And you know, there's typical resistance to getting help or to acknowledging certain things. And with addiction, that's certainly, you know, at a greater level, I would say. You know, the first and foremost thing I tell any family member that contacts me is to really just set healthy boundaries. You know, if there's money that's been given or rent that's being paid or, you know, any enabling behaviors, right? The first goal is to make sure that we're setting some limits, because you know, the disease will continue if we allow it, right? And if there's nothing healthy in place. You know, my second thing is that if we've leveraged all those is to utilize an intervention service. I mean, RCA has free intervention services 24/7. And really what that is a trained professional coming in to meet with the family to help set those boundaries and to, you know, have a meeting where the individual engages in treatment. I think I've seen one intervention so far in the 4 years I've been with RCA that did not transition to someone coming to treatment. So it's extremely successful. You know, it really is to have an outsider, you know, engage your family and have them all tell you what they're seeing, even if you can't see it yourself. And
so,
finally, you know, I
okay.
think it's just
go ahead.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, Dylan. Go ahead.
All right, go ahead. No, it's just the support. You know, it's who's that person that's going to help encourage them and be honest.
Yeah. Well, I want to touch on this. We're coming up on a break. I want to continue that because, as I was telling you, my friend was telling me this is his son who's got a problem. And you know, he was saying to me, I know you have RCA on your show, you know, but I think the kid needs help. And I said, yeah, from what you're describing, he does. But I really like that intervention situation. Now, these are people that work for RCA, or are they outside people that this is all they do? How does that work, Dawn?
No, they work for us. I mean, and they're awesome. You know, they really are. We work with them at the facility as well, but they basically get the call. They're trained interventionists, and they go out and get the job done. It's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, and I hear you. I tell you what those guys do. I've had them on the show. I just don't know how they do it, to be very honest with you. But that's why everybody has their own thing, right? We've got more to talk about here on the show. Dawn Belamarich is our guest. She is the CEO of the Lighthouse at Maze Landing. And, of course, it's our Fighting the Opioid Addiction series. And if you have a question, feel free to jump in here at 609-407-1450. If you have a question for Dawn about anything we're talking about, 609-407-1450. With Dawn Bellamarich, I'm your host, John DeMasi. More of our Fighting the Opioid Addiction series on Talk with a Purpose after these words. Back here on Talk with a Purpose, our guest, Dawn Bellamarich, Recovery Centers of America. She is the CEO of the Lighthouse at Maze Landing. And again, the number, any kind of a question, any thought, whatever you need help, 1-800-RECOVERY is the number. If I were you and you have someone who you think needs it and you don't want to tell them, I always say write it down and hand it to them. Say, hey, maybe you want to call these people. 1-800-RECOVERY. 1-800-RECOVERY for Recovery Centers of America. As I said, Dawn Bellamarich is our guest. She is the CEO of the Lighthouse at Maze Landing. And if you have a question for Dawn right now here on our show, 609-407-1450, 609-407-1450. Dawn, this is a good time to talk about an intervention done by your CEO, Brian O'Neill. The 8-day intervention. I don't even know how you can do an intervention for 8 days, but he was successful. I'm sure you've heard that story.
He's
many
very
times.
Persistent.
Yes.
He's very persistent, as you know, John.
Yes, I know. I mean, I often talk about that when you're on the show or when anyone is on the show from RCA, and I say, well, this is why RCA is thorough, because their CEO and. Who would ever think that a guy who's an entrepreneur would be doing interventions, but people would call him, like neighbors would call him. Hey, I heard Brian does that. And he did a few. And then he actually lost one. And I know that bothered him. And I know it bothers him to this day. And that's why RCA is so thorough, because he's got in his mind that that one he lost, he shouldn't have lost. Did you find that to be true, Dawn?
I do. And I, you know, the great thing about that story when we tell it is that the mission starts from the top. You know, RCA exists because Brian had so many calls and because he was so passionate about this. And, you know, it's important to remember why we're doing what we do. And, you know, that is the need for us to answer in 10 seconds or less when someone calls and get a real person, is that, you know, the chances of us losing someone to this disease are great. And we want to mitigate any risk we can in ensuring that that doesn't happen.
I want to go back to, an intervention, and let's say it's an individual who, whether it's drugs or alcohol, the person knows they have a problem, knows they need help, and the people around them are trying to get them help, and the person says, I don't care, listen, I just want to die, I don't care. What do you recommend people do, or what say you about helping people deal with that kind of an attitude?
I think the first thing that happens when, you know, we have a loved one who's very, you know, depressed and using, is we tend to just continue the same, you know, type of behaviors and not really change anything up. And, you know, when we do interventions, and I know you, I think you've had Rob on, and I don't know if Tammy, right, that the goal is for the family to set some healthy boundaries and what's going to be different. You know, obviously, if there's a crisis, we always recommend taking someone to a hospital, right? Like if they're actively suicidal, you know, but the disease really feeds on knowing that everybody will stay the same and, you know, enable and really allow behaviors to continue. So, you know, family, friends, loved ones holding the line and saying, hey, you know, you have a problem. I'm seeing this in real time, and I love you and I want you to get help is really at the core of the intervention.
Is the first thing they should do just call your 800 number? I mean, if they're in a situation like that.
Yes. And for anything, you know, even if it's something we can't support them on, you know, real person answering the phone 10 seconds or less. If an intervention is needed, it's immediately escalated to that point to get somebody on the phone to encourage that.
And we should also mention that if you don't have, let's say, insurance, I mean, you will direct people, correct? I mean, you will direct them somewhere. You're not just going to say, hey, we can't treat you, goodbye. You do kind of help them?
Absolutely.
Okay. So really
and
that
provides scholarship opportunities.
Yeah, that would be a prudent phone call to make, that 1-800-RECOVERY call, is what I'm saying. That would be the smart thing to do in calling that
right,
number.
Probably one of the most important, you know, numbers someone can call just for advice, information, referrals, or support.
We were talking about RCA and about what's happening. I'm sure you're aware of it. The expansion has been tremendous. I mean, you're in, looks like now you're in 6 states. And talk about positions. If people need jobs in your field, I mean, I read a press release, 700 positions in 6 states. I mean,
yeah.
And the reason
it's definitely a lot.
Yeah. I was looking at, I saw it and I said, well, there's openings here. There's openings at the Lighthouse at Mays Landing for those in the area who may be seeking a position if you're in that field. And I guess it's across the board, but you're really in 6 states. Do you know what the reason is for the expansion? I mean, is it, obviously there's a big need for this since this opioid crisis.
Yeah. And I think it's a testament to when you brought up earlier, right? 6 years ago, we started this and Lighthouse was our first, you know, was our first site. And, you know, the need is so great that we've expanded so rapidly. And, you know, obviously we're looking for the best team members to come on, but there's a need. And I think if COVID taught us anything is that the need is greater than ever. So RCA is working to respond to that as soon as possible.
Yeah, you know, and I think some of the laws have been changed, Dawn, because I'm actually going in for some minor surgery on Tuesday. I've had a back problem and pain in the back, and my primary doctor says, you know, it's really hard to prescribe painkillers these days. And I said, well, that's good.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure you're aware of that. You know, that all of this was caused by, and I also saw that there was a major lawsuit. Someone who was pushing doctors to prescribe drugs got sued, and they settled the case, and Pennsylvania and New Jersey are getting a lot of money as a result of a lawsuit. So it looks like the powers that be are trying to help turn the tide as far as the opioid crisis is concerned.
Yeah, and I think it's a testament, too, to like what we're seeing on, as far as the impact goes on, you know, our citizens and the public. Is we, you know, really open the floodgates and treating these things. And I hope your surgery on Tuesday is minor and you're, you know, okay. And
it is.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
But the idea
that you can't get the narcotics, right, is really a testament to that progress.
Absolutely. And that's why I wanted to bring it up because, you know, I was never one for painkillers anyway. I mean, you know, back in the day, I'm sure you know, I had a wisdom tooth out and the doctor gave me 30-day supply of Percocet, which I took one and the reaction was terrible. And I threw the rest down the toilet. So,
wow. Yeah. And that was typical. You know, that was standard operating procedure.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so I wanted to point that out and make sure that people understood that, hey, we're making progress, which is good. You know, and that's, I'm glad that you're on the show and RCA is part of our show so we can keep people posted on this. But I wanted to talk more about really getting people to the point where they accept the fact, besides making the call to 1-800-RECOVERY and all of that, is there anything a family member can do? Do you suggest something like, hey, if you don't get treatment, I'm throwing you out of the house? I mean, we've heard that before. Does that work? Is that helpful? Talk about that, Dawn.
Yes, I do think, you know, it's obviously different for every individual, but I do think setting boundaries and healthy boundaries and expectations is always the best first route. You know, it's, I don't know the unique circumstances of somebody living where they're living, right, and like not being able to live there anymore, but you know, addiction will really continue if we don't put a boundary in place. And I always tell families, you know, you're not alone. Call 1-800-RECOVERY, have someone support you in setting those boundaries. You know, a new thing we're really trying at Lighthouse, and I'm very proud of, is having one of our team members in long-term recovery do some level of outreach. You know, whether it's to support a family member or someone who's actively struggling, because I think there's a lot of value in hearing from someone who's went through the process and has success. you know,
absolutely.
And just that honesty that comes from, you know, one addict helping another, I think is really beneficial. So yeah, you know, boundaries and support always the way.
You know, you're reading my mind, Dawn. I'm working with Becky in your organization, and we're working on doing a couple of shows with people who have recovered and to talk about the process and how it's helped them and how it's changed their life. So you're kind of reading my mind here on the show. Do you do that often?
I might have heard that about that already, John. So I might have already been prepped. I talked to Becky, but I could be a mind reader too. I won't release that on today's broadcast.
Okay. All right. Let's go to the phones, Dawn. We have Ginny and Abseek. And Ginny, good morning. You're on with Dawn Bellamarich from Recovery Centers of America.
How long does it actually take for someone to get addicted? Let's say you have a total knee replacement and you're given Percocet in the hospital. When I had my knee replacements done, I only took what they gave me in the hospital. In rehab, I used Advil, and that was my own choice. The Percocet was offered, but I only used the Advil because I knew that I could get addicted. There's constipation. There's other issues with being very, very uncomfortable. And I knew. I knew from working in nursing for many, many years that these things happen. But your experience, how long does it actually take people to get addicted, or is it different for everybody?
Great question, Ginny. And, you know, it does vary on the substance and obviously brain chemistry. But with the, you know, pain medications and opiates, I've heard 72 hours or less, you know, is the amount of time it can take for your brain to become addicted. And, you know, I kudos to you, right? Like obviously having some background and understanding in this, but I think that is the harm in prescribing medications like this, and not that they're not needed in certain circumstances, but they're very strong. They're very addicting. And, you know, a 72 hour time frame to become dependent on something is a very challenging situation for someone who's never experienced that.
Okay. All right. You answered my question. Thank you so much.
All right, Ginny, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Coming up on our final break of the hour, we still have time for a call or two. If you want to ask a question of Dawn Bellamarich from Recovery Centers of America, 609-407-1450 with Dawn Bellamarich. I'm John DeMasi. We return. Final thoughts on today's program after these words. Back here on Talk With a Purpose, our guest, Dawn Bellamarich, Recovery Centers of America. Remember this number. Back, write it down. 1-800-RECOVERY, 1-800-RECOVERY. This is one of those things where people are reluctant to talk about it. So you just write the number down and you hand it to them. Say, maybe these people can help you. 1-800-RECOVERY, 1-800-RECOVERY for Recovery Centers of America. We have a couple of minutes left of the show. If you want to jump in with a quick question for Dawn Bellamarich, 609-407-1450. Yeah, we were talking earlier, Dawn, that this now in our sixth year of doing the show with the Recovery Centers of America, our partners in this fighting the opioid addiction. What do you feel, give us your opinion, and whether you have it fact-based or not, what's the most, I would say, important and significant part of the treatment process?
You know, I think it's different for everyone, but taking that first step is always the piece I see as, you know, someone's walls coming down and saying like, okay, I need to access the help. I'm always amazed by like that first week, you know, how I do see a lot of people come in right at their worst, and then to see that light come back in their eyes and, you know, that hope is really incredible. But taking that first step is the most significant thing that happens on a daily basis for those struggling.
And do you talk to people about taking that first step and how you can get them? Because we've touched on that a little bit here on the show. Do you talk to people? Do you counsel people on how to take that first step?
I do. And I think, you know, shows like this and what we've been doing over the last 6 years are really helpful for that, right? Because, you know, when we first started, we're this innovative concept, right? Of course, Lighthouse Around, but, you know, we're trying to create this community for recovery where people feel comfortable coming forward. And, you know, it's not just talking one-on-one to people, but it's broadcasts like this and, you know, hiring back people that went through our program to work at Lighthouse that get to tell their story to others. That creates this sense of belonging, the sense that I can do it too. And I really think that that's what we've been able to accomplish over the last 6 years.
You know, we've been talking about, and you know, when I've visited, and I've visited all the facilities in this area, I haven't been, you have to invite me to Indiana and Illinois, okay? And I'll check it out there. But
as soon as I get there, I'm taking you with me.
Okay, no problem. But I've noticed a kind of a family atmosphere. And I think that's important because, listen, you're taking people away from familiarity and you're putting them in a situation where, you know, maybe they don't exactly want to be there, but they want the help. They know they need the help. But I think it's important. And can you talk just for a moment about the family atmosphere that the RCA has created?
Sure. I think that's what we probably spend the most time on is creating a culture where you discuss people can feel comfortable and safe coming in. You know, it's not just for someone struggling with addiction. Any human taken out of their element to go to a new place is scared. You know, they're uncomfortable. And we spend a lot of time focused on that. And that's the reason, you know, is we want people to come in and feel like, okay, I'm taking a scary next step, but look how great this place is. Look how close-knit they are. Look at, you know, how warm and welcoming they are to me coming through the door. I mean, that's the intention. And I always get the most excited when people mention that they feel that from their first point of contact, because that's our goal.
And I've tasted the food. The food's good.
Yeah, it's not a hard selling. Yeah, honestly, it's a big selling point, John. So we work really hard on the food, too.
And that's important. That's important. Dawn, we certainly thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to us here on the show. Dawn Belamarich, CEO of the Lighthouse at Mays Landing. And again, that number, 1-800-RECOVERY, 1-800-RECOVERY for Recovery Centers of America. Dawn, thanks a lot for coming on, and we'll talk to you next time you're on, which I know that'll be soon.
Thanks for having me, John. Appreciate it.
All right. Have a good day. And with that, geez, boy, I tell you what, 3 hours goes by very fast. With that, we put the wraps on another edition of Talk with a Purpose. Don't forget, you can listen again. We have our Talk with a Purpose replay, and that is tomorrow, Sunday, from 5 until 8. And then you can simply listen at any time you go to our podcast. Just Google John DeMasi Podcast. And I understand that after today, we will have 61 shows that you'll be able to access. 61 shows. Oh, you know what? You think about it. Did I do that many? I've probably done more than that. So you can do that and listen to the show. And of course, next week we're back. Saturday, 9 till noon, WPG Talk Radio 95.5. And again, online at WPGTalkRadio.com. Next week, we'll have Dave Capri from East Coast Roofing and Siding. And the following week, Frank Formica. He is the Director of Shared Services for Atlantic County. And coming up in March, we will have Jeff Van Drew, our congressman, here on the show. I'm John DeMasi. As always, a pleasure. Thanks for listening. Have yourself a great week. We'll do it all over again next Saturday. Talk with a Purpose, 9 till noon. WPG, Talk Radio 95.5. You take care.